Ahoy, mateys! Welcome aboard The Shallows, the pod designed specifically for all you 10-team and smaller league managers out there. I'm your captain, Eric Henriksen, alongside chief mate Carson Picard. Carson, how are the seas faring today?
Eric, I got woken up at 3 in the morning last night because there was just shock and terror in the skies last night. Just claps of thunder. A couple trees fell in my backyard here. No damage or anything, really, but just some landscaping work is going to need to be done, basically. But I was waking up, and it's just some of the loudest thunder I've heard. And I was like, oh, okay.
This is great. Was it the thunder of Buxton hitting home runs?
Ah, nice segue, Eric. Not quite, but was close.
Oh, man. I'm never a fan of when the weather wakes me up. And sometimes the rain, because of how my house is situated, we get rain like directly onto my bedroom window, and just so loud. It's not fun. It's not fun. But it's you know, those summer thunderstorms. There have been a lot of thundering bats lately. Yesterday, I feel like, was a huge day for offense. We are recording this on Wednesday, June 10th here. Big day for offense yesterday. And we will get to some of that. Some injuries, too. On today's show, we have the captain's report, traditional captain's report, news and notes. We have the return of walking the plank. So that's fun. These are going to be hitters, pitchers that it might be time to give them the old boot off the ship. And then we have a new segment. Can you name the top five? That's going to be a lot of fun. I was just perusing leaderboards today, as one does. And I found some fun stats that I want to throw at Carson to see if he can guess the top five in whatever stat I decide to throw out there. I have actually not decided what stats those are going to be, so we're going to do that live on the pod. It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. Oh, boy, is right. Before we officially leave port, we release a new episode every Friday. The audio version releases at 7 a.m. Eastern, wherever you get your podcast, and the video version premieres on YouTube the same night at 8 p.m. Eastern as well. If you want to see our beautiful made-for-radio mugs, so be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Leave us a 5-star rating, like, a thumbs up, a kind review, and don't forget, we're part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network, so check out the other pods we have available as well. There are new episodes out daily, and visit pitcherlist.com for all the latest and greatest content published daily as well. When we come back, it's the Captain's Report, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Shallows. That's Carson Picard. I'm Eric Henriksen, and this is the Captain's Report. First up, did you see this game the other day, Carson? The Brewers and Athletics, 15-14, playing in it's technically a minor league ballpark, but playing in the altitude with a red fire hazard warning, and I'll explain that in a second. Was it the game of the year, of the decade, of all time? It was insane. Tell us about it.
This was past my bedtime, but I heard about this after the heck, and I was just, I don't know, man. It was, I'm looking at the box score here. What am I seeing? About 34 hits, if I'm doing my math correctly, 29 runs. I mean, this is just one of the most ridiculous baseball games ever played. I mean, there was a Twins-Yankees game a few years back in 2019 where it ended, I think, a 12-11, very famous line out. Aaron Hicks caught a Max Kepler line drive. This is up there with that. I mean, it's very rare that your starting pitcher allows 5 earned runs and 5 innings and 8 hits, and you're like, you know what? Not too bad. All things considered, that wasn't that bad. Considering Kyle Harrison got Sheldon, this is one of those unfortunate things where it's like sometimes you do have to take into account the really strange games when you're doing some player analysis. And Kyle Harrison giving up 8 earned runs and 2 1/3 innings, listen. We're going to just give that a mulligan. It's just crazy things were going on. I mean, so Las Vegas is at about 2,000 feet of altitude. Not Coors level, but kind of in the middle between, you know, geographically sort of in the middle between Chase Field and Coors, but also in elevation. And with the heat, with everything going on, the close dimensions, this was just a slugfest. And we're recording this on Wednesday, the 10th. There's another game between the Brewers in Oakland, the team formerly known as the Oakland A's, in Vegas again. So we'll see how that transpires. But the last game was 7-5 too. I mean, it wasn't a low scoring affair either. It was bats were going.
Yeah. So the dimensions of this ballpark aren't actually, like, they're not crazy small. It's not like Yankee Stadium down the line or, like, you know, 380 feet to center field. It's not. It has sizable dimensions, but this is a PCL ballpark. And Las Vegas was experiencing what they called like a red warning. And what that means, having lived in Los Angeles forever and, you know, wildfires, it means there's a heightened danger of wildfires. Why? Because it's super hot and the humidity is super low. So what does that mean for baseballs? They're going to fly, which is why you had a 95 mile per hour exit velo, like super high launch angle home run carry in that game. And I think normally that ball travels less than 400 feet, like 380 or something, normally on average. And I believe the home run that I'm specifically talking of, and I can't remember who hit it, but it went like 425 feet or some ridiculous number. It just kept going.
I know what you're talking about. I saw some stuff. It was I'm glad you talked about that because I was looking a while ago. We were talking about some fly balls and stuff, and I was looking at environmental impacts on baseball traveling, humidity, and we talk about elevation a lot when we're talking about how it impacts the ball flight, but humidity is also an element to that as we look at the atmospheric pressure. We talk about the marine layer in San Diego or Los Angeles to a lesser extent, but the inverse of that would certainly be here in Vegas. And if it was especially dry, I don't have the weather conditions in front of me. Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, it was kind of like a video game. It was hilarious. I was listening to another podcast, and they were watching the game live while they were recording it, and their reactions were hysterical.
That's brilliant.
It just was just like a cartoonish game of sorts. But yeah, a lot of fun to watch. If you like offense, if you like pitching, close your eyes. Yeah.
Quick to wrap this up about digging up the, first of all, there was 11 home runs in this game, which is hilarious, but Jonah Heim was the one who hit a 95 exit velocity off the bat, 48 degree launch angle, went 398. So
that 398. Okay. Kept,
I mean, still, it wasn't ridiculous. No. It kept going. Andrew Vaughn hit one 420 feet off 101 miles an hour. William Contreras, Jesus, 463.
But it's not like he hit it 107, I think, William Contreras, right?
On the dot, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not like 107 goes 460 feet most of the time. So.
No, that you gotta get in like Jordan Walker territory to get that far. Schwarber,
yeah.
Like, that's insane.
Yeah, it's just kind of a clown show. It really was. A lot of fun to watch and analyze, if you can't tell. All right, moving on. Major injuries have occurred. In fact, landing on the 10-day injured list with yet another hamstring strain, a reoccurrence of the left hamstring strain, is Ronald Acuña Jr. This is extremely frustrating. Carson, did he rush back or did he just pull it again?
It's tricky. I mean, it's always tricky to say. I mean, you would think that they'd be careful with such a prized asset in when they're not hunting for playoff position. They've been doing so well. We're not trainers. I'm not a trainer. I don't know what's happening here. What I do know is that for Acuña, who is, by the way, 28 years old, like he's not old enough to have had this many leg injuries already. I think we got to really start talking about the fact that like, we may see Acuña get the Yordan Alvarez treatment of just like your legs can't play in the outfield.
Yeah, it's possible just to save him because this happened sprinting to first base, which is, I don't know if you saw it. It looked really bad. And I just love how the reports and even their manager was like, yeah, he's day to day. I'm like, no, that is an IL stint. He pulled up real lame. It was not pretty.
Yeah.
Not as bad as Emilio Pagan, but it was not good. Not good at all. O'Neill Cruz headed to the 10-day injured list with metacarpal, which is your hand, by the way. Your metacarpals are in your hand. Fractures. Expected to miss at least a month. We talked about O'Neill Cruz last week. He was one of the players. I got wrong. Not you. I got wrong. And although I'm not sure. We'll see. Did you see what happened here? Did he get hit with a pitch?
I didn't see this. No, I'm looking at the injury reports here. I would have to imagine. I don't know another way you would break your hand like that. Either way, it doesn't really matter the way it happened. Point is, he's going to be out about a month, at least a month. So this is probably a post All-Star break coming back here.
I always get worried when guys have wrist or hand fractures. How is that going to affect their power? The good thing with O'Neal Cruz, he's got a lot to lose. So, he'll hit 114, not 120. also coming down today on Wednesday, June 10th, the news that Matt Brash is headed to the 15-day IL with a lat strain. Second IL stint of the season for Matt Brash. Was really a good piece out of the Seattle bullpen. But some good news for Seattle is, I don't know if you saw this, yesterday in his rehab game, the dumper homered twice. As long as he's healthy, man, I'm telling you, he's going to be totally fine coming back. All right, speaking of catchers, Dylan Dingler has hit 5 home runs in June. And if you haven't heard us mention it 2 or 3 times already in the show, it's only June 10th. And the man has 5 home runs this month. Very impressive. Having a breakout season, I would say. What do you think?
Yeah, Dingler has been, he's been really phenomenal with the glove behind the plate. One of the best defensive catchers in baseball at the moment. But yeah, I don't know if you have been like paying attention to how Dingler's been doing and some of the under the hood metrics, but it's a V8 engine under there. It is roaring. He's been sensational. Great bat to ball skills, surprisingly effective game power, and now some of those gap power sort of hits are going over the fence, raising the slug a lot. This is fantastic. He's been one of the best catchers in baseball. Simple as that.
You know, this kind of reminds me a little bit of Ben Rice last year, except he's not underperforming numbers. I'm just saying, this is a breakout, and it just is, straight up. He's pulling the ball a lot. You look at his spray chart, my goodness. So let me see. Look at his pull error rate real quick. Yeah, a very solid 22.8%. Dylan Dingler, I have not really been paying attention to him to answer your question, because I, in a weird way, invested in catcher like Cal Raleigh, Yvonne Herrera, Drake Baldwin. So I haven't really been paying attention to him. I didn't have a need to pick him up anywhere, but wish I did, because he's looking real good.
May not still be too late.
Possibly, yeah. If he's out there in your leagues, go pick him up, because this is what a breakout looks like. Pecro Armstrong has 4 home runs in June. Okay. I feel like I'm a little infamous for not believing in him, and I still don't, but he runs hot and cold. He runs hot and cold.
Hey, I respect it a little bit. He's back on 2020 pace.
He is. So, and he has improved in some areas.
I don't think he'll hit 31 home runs again, but no. I don't know what the exact numbers, but like 75% of his raw stolen base and home run production from last year, which is like, that's pretty dang good still.
Yeah.
Early third round pick value, probably not, but like solid.
No. So I'll still be right if he's a bust, not give him third round value. Anyway, I will die on that hill. Last point we have here in the captain's report is Logan Webb back. I think he is. 15 innings, 1 earned run, 6 hits, 11 strikeouts across 2, I'll say like complete starts since coming back from the IL, because his first one was only 4 1/3.
Yeah, this is in the month of June when he has these two, but. Yeah, Webb's been outstanding. The strikeouts aren't like ridiculous at the moment. 11 Ks and 15 innings is crazy, but with Webb, he kind of does that sometimes. He's someone that if you attack him early and his stuff is making it so that you're hitting the ball in the dirt, none of that really matters. For a guy who was really struggling before hitting the IL and has come back roaring, I think this is very encouraging. I had Webb benched for a little bit coming back, and I'm looking at him like, oh, yeah, okay. He's proved, sometimes I needed to be a little passive and say, all right, prove me wrong. And I was proved wrong and doubting him. And He's Logan Webb, man. You know what you're getting.
Yeah. One of the most consistent starting pitchers in the fantasy landscape over the last few years. And when we say fantasy landscape, that obviously also means in real baseball. So Logan Webb has done a great job since coming off the IL. And perhaps that's why he wasn't good before going on the IL, because his knee was bothering him. So don't judge players too harshly, especially the first few weeks of the season. All right. I think he's back. You think he's back. And we'll be right back with Walking the Plank. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Shallows. That's Carson Picard. I'm Eric Hendrickson. And this is Walking the Plank. These are some players who have been not so good recently, who might be ready to, like, you know, give them the little shove off the plank, off the ship, off the team, off your rosters. So first up here, we have Shota Imanaga, who I'm sorry, he's been terrible his last four starts. And I don't think it's going to get any better because he starts tonight at Coors Field. So you, by the time you're listening to this, you will know whether or not Imanaga can maybe turn it around. But he was breaking out, and now he's gone in literally the opposite direction at 100 miles an hour. So, Carson, is it time to give Imanaga the boot and tell him to walk the plank?
It's really tricky. I think Imanaga has been quite unlucky with his fly balls lately. And the thing with Imanaga is that that is what makes or breaks him. If he is, I mean, right now he's allowing 2 home runs per 9. That's kind of ridiculous. That is up from last year when his fastball and just stuff was worse. This year, a lot of that stuff is better. And this is the weird thing with Imanaga, is there's sort of a discrepancy, and there always will be, between some of his pitch modeling stuff and some of his actual results. He generally is graded very well in his locations. The stuff, you know, comes and goes. I think generally I am a little bullish on Imanaga because I just sort of think this is a over regression of sorts in terms of the fly ball expectancy. He was doing really well in preventing home runs. That has completely swung the other way. I think it's going to swing back, and he does still have a lot of strikeout stuff and a lot of command. Basically, I think Imanaga is a guy who is he's a cherry bomb type pitcher, you know, who has really good upside against weaker lineups and against your Atlantas, your Los Angeles Dodgers, your Yankees, all those big Brewers, all those big offenses, is probably a sit. Like, I wouldn't start him in Coors Field, for instance.
No. I have him on the bench.
Yeah, probably wise. Maybe he'll come out firing and do really well, and I'll feel really smart for thinking, hey, I think he's actually going to be decent. No, I wouldn't walk the plank with Imanaga, but he's close.
Yeah, he's, I think he's tied to the pole, that where the next step would be to walk the plank.
Yeah, he's mopping the deck.
Yeah. I think he's going to turn it around. Would you call him a buy low candidate at the moment?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people kind of panicking on him, and in our shallower leagues, people have a shorter leash anyway. I think he's a buy low, and yeah, I think there's a route for him.
Yeah, perfect. Next up, we thought he was back earlier in the season, and he is very much not. Sandy Alcantara, walk the plank.
Oh, Sandy. I don't know what to make of Sandy Alcantara, Eric. I really don't, because he still a lot of the things you normally think of when you're looking at players and, like, are they going to do well again year after year? Is their velocity the same? Is their pitch moving the same? Is it coming out fine out of their hand? And for the most part with Sandy, it still is. He's still throwing that sinker, you know, north of 97 miles an hour. He still has a dynamic changeup. Everything feels good. And it's just not working out. I think the really tricky thing with Alcantara, as I'm looking through and some of the year-over-year metrics and what's really gone down, is he's just not able to get swing and miss to bolster his ground ball approach. And frankly, he's not getting that many ground balls either. So, I mean, where he used to be a guy that sort of, actually, frankly, kind of pitched like Christopher Sanchez, if we're being honest, He's just kind of not having that approach work. And I don't know if there's going to be a change that's necessary, but I think we can walk the plank with Sandy a bit here, because I don't think it's working. Whatever the approach was a few years ago, and I don't know if it's radically changed, whatever he's doing this year has not and is not working. And that's sort of a continuation of last year.
Yeah, it is. His numbers to me look very similar to 2023, which was the year before he got hurt. Or actually, I think, did he get hurt during the season? Yeah. That was the year he did get hurt.
Yep.
But, man, to me, Sandy was always somebody who walked a very fine line of being relevant. I understand he won a Cy Young. I understand he had an ERA around or sub three for like one, two, three, four, five straight seasons.
He was outstanding, but Sandy was never a swing and miss guy, really, right, or a big strikeout guy. So he was very much dependent on, like, can he can't win in those margins. He has to win in the contact margins.
Right. And it's not working out for him. BABIP is up a little bit, BABIP against him, which is interesting. But to me, it's not like it's 350. It's 298. And for his career, it's
he throws 275. He throws low in the zone. It's always going to be a little – it actually should be inflated. That's probably right. It's kind of amazing it's been that low now that I'm looking at it. But
I think Sandy can walk the plank. I just – you're not going to get numbers from him that are going to help your team going forward. The strikeout rate, like you said, too low. And in shallow leagues, he's fringy. He's maybe stream him against the worst offense in baseball. Stream him against the Rockies when they come to Miami. That's about what I can say about Sandy. All right, next up on the list here, George Kirby. Oh, this is an interesting one, because I have opinions on George Kirby, but is he walking the plank?
Yeah, this is an interesting one to me, too. And then I was kind of looking at just who's not been performing well this year. And George Kirby, I mean, kind of doing what he did last year, but just a little worse. ERA north of four. The strikeouts have gone down. The whip is kind of sustaining at like a, you know, decently high sort of place. Whip's like around 1.28. I'm like, I don't know with Kirby. It's been tricky. A lot of the things you really like about him, that high floor dependency, well, that floor has sunk a little bit. He is now not delivering, I think, enough on a per-game basis. And when you I know he's pitching really well in terms of, like, the velocity and the actual stuff coming out of the hand, all that jazz. And he doesn't walk anyone still. You know, that's not changed. Although quietly, the walk rate has ticked up from like below five to like 5.5, which is still very high, but his walk rate has literally doubled.
It has, yeah.
It's doubled, you know, technically true. Here's the thing. George Kirby, K-minus walk percentage, basically his entire career has been slightly north of 20. This year, it's south of 15%. A lot of the things he's been doing well, he isn't this year.
Yeah, to me, the thing that sticks out is his ground ball rate has shot up tremendously. It's at like 53.5%, and it's been below 45 for most of his career. So that tells me that there's a different pitch mix and approach happening here, and possibly the benefits of that we haven't seen yet, and maybe that's coming down the line. I have an interesting stat here for you about George Kirby. He ranks 7th in ERA minus FIP, which to me is an indicator of luck. So he's 7th in unluckiness in how I read that stat. Now, I'm oversimplifying it.
Yes.
But just hear me out, because maybe that stat comes up later.
You dork.
Just to give you my opinions on George Kirby, I've never been the biggest fan of his. I know people would draft him as an ace, as their number two. I never thought of him as that, as a mid threes guy with a sub 1K per nine or 9K per nine, however you want to say. Yeah, I always, at the level that people would draft George Kirby, I would want more out of that pitcher. So I've never really been in on him. That being said, if we're going to compare him to Imanaga and Alcantara, the two guys that we talked about before this, I think he's less volatile than both of those guys. But I still just don't think he's that great. I don't think he's like, I think he's probably like your number five or six starter in fantasy. I don't think he's higher ask you than this. That.
Yeah. Are you dropping him in an eight teamer?
You probably can.
Yeah. Yeah.
You probably can drop him in an eight teamer. I would say in a 10 teamer, depending on how your league operates. Like, I know I play in a couple 10 team leagues where if George Kirby were dropped, he'd be picked up immediately. Mm-hmm. Even though it's not the deepest 10 team league. It's just people in my, like, maybe it's my league mates. It's definitely not the stat categories, cause it's not like it's seven pitching, six hitting. It's six by six. People would overvalue, starting pitching. And so I know he would get scooped up. So, you know, if you're in a 10, be careful. If you're in an eight, I think you can go ahead and drop him. All right, next up on the list here, we have Trey Turner, former first round stalwart. Walk the plank.
Yep.
Ooh.
Yep.
Wow.
Eric, I don't know if you've noticed how Trey Turner has been this year.
I have not.
Oh.
No shares.
Here's a live reaction of Eric looking up Trey Turner's stats, because it's not good, man. It's just not good. There's nothing there. And Turner has always been kind of fringy, right? He's a contact heavy guy, which we normally don't like when you're drafting that high, very dependent on the steals and very dependent on a high average. Here's the thing with Trey Turner right now. As of recording, Trey Turner is hitting 226.
Yuck.
Gross. That's gross. That's gross. He's not getting on base a high clip as a result of that. He's not going to be delivering on that value. And a lot of the thing you love about Trey Turner are that he's going to be around a 300 hitter that probably swipes 30 plus stolen bases. He might get to 30 stolen bases on the year. It's going to be very close for him. But right now, I mean, he's got seven home runs on the year. He's hitting 226. He's been not good. And maybe you can play some games with the stolen bases and home runs to justify it. But I think the ratios on your, if you're in OBP league, it's awful. If you're in average league, it's not great. It's got a 70 OPS plus, man. Just rough.
Ugh.
I know the steals are really important, but in a shallow league at shortstop, and there's always guys.
Yeah, I would sell Trey Turner if you have him. Don't drop him, because just out of name hard, value yeah, alone, I mean, you know. But in terms of walking the plank, yes, I'd have him walk in a trade. yeah, wow. Okay, so another guy I haven't really paid much attention to. One, because a long track record. Two, I don't have any shares because of exactly the reasons that you mentioned. Contact dependent, speed dependent, high average dependent. And for a guy who has never been big power, he's 33 years old, and the steals of, can I just make that sound? That's how I feel about Trey Turner. Not great. Not great. Try and sell if you can. Who's one player that you would try and trade Trey Turner for right now, purely because you know he has name value?
For Trey Turner, it's going to be a player. Well, let me think about this. Because I don't want to be too dramatic.
Who doesn't love the drama?
Who would I really like to have for Trey Turner? I think you got to go someone that I think can give you more consistent production. I don't think it's you're asking me to make this on the fly. Michael Garcia. I don't know.
Oh, I would do that.
I don't know if that trade would happen, but that's a name. It's just like, I feel like that's within the realm of like,
yeah,
two, I think, underperformers kind of.
Yeah, I think that's where Trey Turner's kind of fallen. Unfortunately, it's not like, I don't think you could turn around and go like a Bryce Harper. Like, at one point, those guys were valued very similarly in drafts and,
yeah,
I mean, you know, year, end of season, yeah, rankings. Exactly. So no one's making that trade right now. All right. Trey Turner. Yeah. Walk the plank in a trade. Don't drop. no matter how shallow. Bench. All right, next up, another guy, similar position, way worse glove, but a guy who was also...
We don't care about that.
We do not. Contact dependent, not really speed dependent after 1 year, but Bo Bichette, walk the plank?
Yeah, I think you do with Bo Bichette, which is tricky because I think Bo Bichette's actually the better hitter than Trey Turner, but Turner has those stolen bases, and Bichette's not going to do that. In a lineup that, well, it's been fairly decent, but it's not fantastic.
No, Turner, it was once the worst offense in baseball.
It was rough. Well, that was when they didn't have Soto, but yeah. Bichette is not good right now, and he's not terrible, but he is not being productive enough in the fantasy context to warrant holding around. And while Trey Turner, I think you can have someone that really wants steals and better the name value with Bichette, everyone around the league kind of knows he's being terrible right now for the Mets. And I don't think there is really enough value there. Nothing at least significant. I the upside on Bichette's capped anyway, because he doesn't have a tremendous amount of like raw power or raw speed where you can tap into that. So you're looking at maybe he, you know, hits pretty well in the second half and gets like 10 home runs or something like that more. And that's just not something I think you should care enough about. He's not worth a roster spot.
Here's some fun things about Bo Bichette. And I personally think he's a great buy low candidate. His current batting average is .230. His expected batting average is .278. That is a lot higher. That's not like, oh, it's .248.
No, yeah, it's a lot higher.
There's one more stat, which I find interesting. His WOBA and ex-WOBA have a 56 point difference, which is a lot. Now, the ex-WOBA, it's not like it's 380. It's 328, which is not super high.
I know I saw that in the pre-show and it's all well listed, but that's one of the things. Yeah. Like that ex-WOBA 328, that's like a slightly above league average hitter.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little above. But for a guy that's going to not give you any stolen bases at shortstop, which is extremely deep, or actually, no, he's third base now, even then.
That's what gives me a little pause.
Well, he has eligibility in both. He should, right?
Yes, he does. Yeah, he does have both.
So, I
do think he's good by low. I think he's good by low.
You really think? You think?
I do, because... You might not expect this. You know, he's in the top 3% in MLB in max exit velocity this year.
That's really funny. I actually do believe that, but that's really funny.
interesting stat. He had the second hardest hit ball ever of his career this year at 114.9.
The thing is, his bat speed is so low.
I know. It's interesting. To me, his numbers aren't his. At least if you look at his Statcast page, they're not that different from last year. And I feel like he's had a lot of bad luck this year. So I would maybe buy low on Bo, but maybe wait for some signs of life. Because I will say this, and Carson, you could judge me and give the judgment after I say this. I had the number one waiver priority in a league, and I used it on Bo Bichette. Thoughts?
I mean, he could turn out, but I just kind of think, you know, we're 65, 70 games into the year, and it's we've been trying to do CPR in this thing the whole time, and it's barely beating. I'm like, I don't know, man.
That's a good way of putting it. Talk about a guy who needs some CPR, actually some chiropractic adjustments, because his back must be the reason why this is just not working for him this year. Vinny Pasquantino, the Pasquatch, walk the plank. Yeah.
I'm nodding my head, audio listeners. Yeah, definitely. Sorry, Vinny P. You got one of the best Twitter accounts in baseball, but no, absolutely not. It's not happening.
Yeah, I don't think he's healthy.
It's just not going well, and the Royals aren't doing anything. And what are you buying here? The on-base percentage has slipped, and that was one of the things that you kind of really liked, and it's just this gross.
Here's a question. Would you drop Vinny Pasquantino for Paul Goldschmidt?
That's a good question. And I would say, yeah. Paul Goldschmidt's quietly been pretty decent this year.
Yeah, he's been very good, especially lately.
After drawing the ire of every Yankees fan in April,
including me,
put him in. Yeah, Goldschmidt has proven that, hey, I am a Hall of Famer that might be first ballot. And he's been decently well for himself. Trouble thing is Goldschmidt's not going to get a ton of playing time, and that's a whole another can of worms. But with Vasconcino, the rates aren't good enough to warrant playing. You can do better.
Yeah. The thing I'd say about Goldschmidt is right now he's going to play. He's hot. He's worth the ad to stream as a hot bat. But as soon as Stanton is healthy, there's no way he's getting as much playing time. And Dominguez is on the way back as well. So just be aware that Goldie maybe will start losing playing time sooner rather than later. But he won't as long as he's as hot as he is right now. Okay, Jackson Merrill, walk the plank.
God, remember Jackson Merrill, like when he came onto the scene and was fantastic?
Yes.
It's been a couple years of diminishing production, and right now yes. He is not good. Mm-hmm. Now, this is another example, as we have a few guys on here that I wanted to be like, well, their expected stats are pretty decent. Can they turn around? And I want to have some nuance here. Oh boy, Merrill though. Merrill is weird.
Yeah.
The physical tools are still there, which is sometimes the thing I want to look at the most in trying to assess, like, are they going to collapse? That being said, the already kind of flimsy plate discipline has not improved at all, and I think indeed gotten worse. He has swiped more bases this year, which is interesting, which compensates a bit for the lack of overall production. This is tricky. I don't in good conscience think you can totally just get rid of him, but he is right. He's on very, very thin ice.
You know what's interesting? Outfield is kind of hard to pick up on the wire at the moment. So that's what gives me pause about dropping Jackson Merrill. But I am really concerned about his contact rates, and his strikeout rates have just kept increasing, and not by like marginal amounts. We're talking like 3 to 5% year over year. And that's not good.
It's not good at all.
Especially for a guy who doesn't have good play discipline.
It's tricky. Now he's 23. So who knows really? And there's nothing, looking under the hood here, the bat speed is still pretty decent. The overall physical traits, like I mentioned earlier, those are fine. So it's more of a mental tweak approach as opposed to a crazy thing. By the way, there's new metrics on Savant that I haven't dug into yet about the average miss distance. I don't know if you saw this, Eric.
No, that's new. You're breaking the news to me.
Yeah. We might talk about them more in the next podcast, but and I know certainly guys over at the Approach Angle podcast, also on Pitcherless, will be talking about that because they talk about everything. But circling back with Merrill, I don't know exactly what's going on. All I know is I don't like it very much, and he is really close. If we can get over this hump of outfield injuries that seems to be spreading everywhere, Merrill might be close to getting on the way out.
Yeah, if for some reason, like, J.J. Bleday is on your wire, I might make that swap with Jackson Merrill, but that's because you have an option like J.J. Bleday on your wire. If you don't, it's kind of hard to risk losing an outfielder. How about this? Would you, because he's not universally owned, would you drop Jackson Merrill for Carson Bench? And not because he shares your name.
Yes. Yeah, I would. Bench has been good. Bench has been really good and has more. I would say I would.
Cool. Yeah, I think I might do that too in a redraft. Dynasty and Keeper, I'm exercising as much caution and patience as I can with Jackson Merrill because we may have seen the ceiling in year one. What do you think? Maybe?
It's too early. Dude was 21 in his rookie year.
Fair. So there is talent there for sure. All right, next up on the list here. Oh boy. Talk about a guy on the opposite end of his career from Jackson Merrill. His teammate, though, Manny Machado. What do you think? Walk the plank?
You know, it's Manny Machado. I think it's his 15th season in Major League Baseball.
Holy smokes. I remember when he came up, Carson, and he was a doubles hitter. And I don't remember who it was on the broadcast. They were facing the Yankees. And it may have been Ken Singleton who said, this guy's doubles power is going to turn into over the fence power in a year or two. And it did.
Good call.
Yeah, great call. That's Ken Singleton.
Three closing in on 400 career home runs. Realizing, God, he might get to 500, which is crazy.
There is a chance.
Manny Machado, one of the better third basemen of all time. Manny Machado, one of the worst couple months we've seen out of a major hitter also. He's hitting 171 right now, which is insane. I mean, this is a guy who has a 275 average on his career, and that's not coming from his 20s. That's last year. Where he was still in line with that. Machado's been weird. Machado's been bad. Machado has a 175 BABIP.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you something, Eric. That's bizarre.
Yes.
That's one of those abnormalities that just has to smooth itself out because there's like no statistical chance it continues.
Yeah. If there was ever a buy low, it is Manny Machado.
I think it's Machado. I don't love where he is right now, but I think there is just like a regression that has to happen. And I think year over year, we're going to be disappointed in this season. But I think if you're looking at a chance in the last 100 games here, I think Machado looks poised to have a nice couple months.
Did you hear what he said about analytics the other day?
I did hear about that. You know what? Maybe you should listen.
Just a thought.
Just a thought.
Yeah, very weird season. I have him in an OBP league, so he's been less bad in that, even though a 253 on base percentage ain't great either.
I don't know how much that's helping you, Eric.
It's less bad than a 171 batting average. I'll put it to you that way. Okay, and last up here, Gunnar Henderson. Walk the plank.
Yeah, so this is the crazy one.
This was a first round pick.
Yeah, this guy was a early second. I remember saying you should take him, and we were in agreement on that. And it's now been a couple months and nothing has happened. I'm gonna give basically the same answer that we concluded on for Trey Turner, which is that I think you gotta sell him for pennies on the dollar because oh my god. It's not good. It's not good. I mean, he's swinging the bat hard, which is nice. But Gunnar Henderson's swing has just been not the same.
Yes.
This is not the MVP caliber player we saw a few years ago that for a while was racing Aaron Judge. This is not the like guy who is looking like he's going to be a perennial all-star. Gunnar Henderson right now is a below average shortstop in Major League Baseball. He, in a shallow league, should not be rostered if there wasn't a name value attached to it, really. He's got 13 home runs. He's been able to, at least when he makes some contact, put it over the fence. But even then, I mean, six stolen bases, the home run stolen bases are making him cling on to relevance. But he's hitting 220 on base percentage below 300. It's just not good, Eric. It's just not good.
I remember a couple weeks ago, he was part of our no name game that we played. And I was surprised when you when either I guessed him or you told me who the player was, which was Gunnar Henderson. And his batting average was over 200 because for a large portion of the beginning of the season, it was not.
Yeah, it's only been recently kind of getting above the Mendoza line, but it has been close. And for a player of this caliber, that was unthinkable in March. It was unthinkable.
It was, yeah.
Not so great. This is a guy who I think you got to sell for pennies on the dollar.
Who would you try and get? One player.
Who would I try to get? Right, Nolan McLean.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Love it. That's perfect. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I would do that in a heartbeat. All right. So that wraps it up for walking the plank. Imanaga, don't walk the plank. Alcantara, walk the plank. Kirby, don't walk the plank. Trey Turner, walk the plank in a trade. Bo Bichette, walk the plank. Vinny Pasquantino, you can't walk the plank fast enough. Jackson Merrill, probably got to walk the plank. Manny Machado, do not walk the plank. In fact, come back here, and if somebody else is making him walk the plank, go get him. And Gunnar Henderson, walk the plank in a trade, right? Sums it up pretty well.
All right.
Cool. All right. When we come back, can you name the top five?
No. Blank.
Have faith in yourself, Carson. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Shallows. That's Carson Picard. I'm Eric Hendrickson here. And this is, can you guess or can you name the top five? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give Carson a category, a stat category, not like batting average. That's not fun. I'm going to give him a random stat category that maybe I teased earlier in the show. And I'm going to see if Carson can name me the top five players in that category. And yes, you can laugh at me and say that's an oversimplification of something, but to me, it's an indication of luck. And that is, for pitchers up first here, it is ERA minus FIP. And the reason I believe this is an indication of luck is because of some of the names here in the top five. So Carson, can you name the top five pitchers in ERA minus FIP?
So we are looking here for the highest numbers. For example, the players with the lowest FIP and the highest ERA.
Correct.
Right. So my first guess is a friend of the show, Jesus Luzardo.
Correct. In the top five, he is number three.
Number three is actually kind of surprising. Yeah, I mean, he's been outstanding. A little worse recently, but he's been outstanding still. Okay.
Number three.
Now the hard part. Now the hard part.
Yes. Everyone, now the hard part.
Okay. Who has been disappointing? I'm going to say guy I mentioned earlier. I'll say Nolan McLean.
No, Nolan McLean is not. He is 18th.
Okay. Okay. Not cool. I won't give myself too much credit for that, but not horrible.
Yeah, not horrible. He's on the list. Horrible.
He's on the list. Who has been, who are people mad about?
There's some really interesting names on this list, by the way.
Reed Detmers.
Yes, Reed Detmers is number one. I do think Reed Detmers has been one of the unluckiest pitchers, if not the most unluckiest pitcher in all of baseball this year. He's, like you've said, we've said it week after week, he's been so good. He's pitching tonight. I'm very curious what that stat line ends up against Houston this evening. All right, that's two. You've got Luzardo and Detmers. Three more to go.
All right. Four pitchers that have high ERA. So, I mean, this is a tricky one because you got to think about strikeouts, and home runs is really what's killer. What are some pitchers that have that? You know, he's always in the mix of this, so I'll throw his name out. How about Kevin Gausman?
Kevin Gausman is not in the top five. He's not even in the top 30.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No, he is. There he is. He's 13th.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
He was hiding there.
He was all right. All right.
Between Cade Cavalli and Colin Rea.
Of all pitchers. Sure.
Of all pitchers. Why not? He's there. He's 13th.
Okay.
This is 0.45, by the way. Reed Detmers is 1.34.
Yeah, that's just been ridiculous. All right. Let's see. I got to think about some other names on here. Who has not allowed.
Can I give you a hint on
one? I would love one.
Okay. He had two atrocious starts to start the year, but yesterday he threw six shutout innings with six strikeouts.
Oh, I don't remember who started yesterday. Oh, this is killer. That's fine.
And he's been really good lately. Like,
two
really
atrocious
good.
Starts to start the year. That
he's a two-pitch pitcher this week.
That makes me think Ranger Suarez.
No, but Ranger Suarez is a good guess. He is 19th, right behind Nolan McLean.
Okay. And he had two terrible starts to the year, but all right. I'll take it. Who else would this be? Can I get a league? Can I get a league for
National League?
National
I'll give you one more. His uniform color, or I should say the logo color, is red.
Okay. Okay.
And you'll find out why I gave you that clue when you guess who it is.
Chase Burns is in the opposite direction, so it's not going to be him.
No. He went 5 1/3. Did not throw six shutout innings yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, y'all should sell high on Chase Burns. That's completely irrelevant. Ooh. But
interesting. Tell us why.
Tell us why. Because I mean, the fit. Yeah, I know you have it sorted. Flip it the other way, and it'll be Chase Burns really high up there. Yeah,
he is.
Yeah, his strikeouts have hasn't been crazy. But back to the matter at hand.
He's eighth in the opposite direction, which is the fortunate luck so far.
I'll go. I don't even know if he'd be qualifying here. I'll go Zach Wheeler.
I don't think he qualifies.
Yeah.
He's not on this list. True. I do have it sorted by qualified pitchers only. So that doesn't mean that he's not on the list, but these are qualified innings.
I'm looking it up. I'm going on my own path. I'm seeing if I'm right.
Oh no, don't cheat.
I'm not cheating. I'm just looking him up. I would never cheat. I am an honest man, Eric. His ERA is okay. Other way, that's fine. God, he has a 2.2 ERA. Jesus. Anyway,
he's been great. He's been great.
Okay. ERA and so basically ERA underperformers this year. I'll say one more name. And I gotta be careful with who I'm thinking of. Let's go with. I'm just bouncing leave to leave. We'll go with. You know what? We said it earlier. I know he's probably around there. I'll go George Kirby. He's gotta be
George Kirby is seventh. He's seventh.
Okay, I was like, you might be sneaking in there. All right.
Yeah. .64. All right, so you got Reed Detmers at number one. You got Jesus Luzardo at number three. You missed Mitch Keller at number two.
Sure. That surprises me. That really surprises me.
Yeah, so his ERA minus FIP is 1.21. He is second behind Reed Detmers. Jesus Luzardo is at 1.16. And then the clue that I gave you, and the reason I gave you His team logo is red is because he has equally red hair, and that is Dustin May. Dustin May threw six shutout innings yesterday. He has been phenomenal lately. The Cardinals working, as one of my friends calls it, their devil magic on pitching once again.
Yeah.
And Dustin May is fourth with a 1.0 difference in his ERA and his FIP. And then Landon Roop rounds out the top five at 0.99. Landon Roop, a little unlucky lately. Also had that outing where he had the back issue. So
Roop's had a weird year. He started really hot, came back down to earth, and now he's been oscillating.
Yes. I think that's kind of what can happen with a guy like him.
Yep.
Just to give you the other names in the top 10, Brian Wu, George Kirby.
Yes. Okay.
Brian Wu, George Kirby. And now this is where it gets a little weird to me. Mackenzie Gore.
Sure. Yeah.
Zach Gallen. That's just
proof. I was thinking about Gallen, actually. I was thinking about him.
You can be in the top 10 in this category and still be terrible. And then rounding out the top 10 is a guy coming off the IL, Dylan Cease.
I was thinking about Cease too. Yep.
To me is incredible because he's been so good this year. And yet still a little unlucky. That's incredible. Some other names, Slade Ciccone, Cade Cavalli, Colin Reyes, Seth Lugo. The next 10 get really weird. So that's why the top five we're going with here. Not too bad. You got 2 out of 5. Not bad.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Especially for some random category like that. All right. Now let's switch over to the hitting side. And now I'm going to ask you this one. I feel like you should get. This is the top five. Can you name the top five hitters in hard hit percentage?
Oh, this one is deceptively tricky. Okay. Let's go.
Now you know why I had a hard time picking a category here.
Hard hit percentage is a little tricky. Yandy Diaz.
Yandy Diaz is not in the top five. He's not even in the top 10.
Crap. Okay. Well, Shohei Ohtani,
not in the top five. He is 15th, 52% hard hit percentage.
Okay. O'Neill Cruz.
O'Neill Cruz is in the top five at number two. He's not even number one.
Yeah. Yep.
Number two at 59.2% hard hit percentage.
All right. All right. Aaron Judge.
Aaron Judge is sixth at 56.6%.
Makes sense, actually. But yeah.
Yeah, because you know, he has like a broken rib up here or something.
Something or other. Okay. Yeah.
And he's still hitting the ball 56.6% of the time hard. It's nuts.
I feel like there's got to be some weird names. Let me think of the obvious ones. Junior Caminero.
Junior Caminero is 29th.
Wow.
7%. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. He swings the bat so dang hard, too.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
The Trop has not really affected him that much.
Yordan Alvarez.
Yordan Alvarez is 9th on the list. 54.4%.
I'm just dancing around the top five here. Who could Nick Kurtz?
Nick Kurtz is 5th at 57.7%. Playing in a video game stadium currently. I think they have another series there after this Brewers series.
Game, I wouldn't know when they may.
I think they do. I think they play Colorado there. Oh boy.
That's fun. Start
Nick Kurtz, start Zach Geloff, start your Oakland hitters. Tyler Soderstrom, speaking of, has been fantastic over the last couple weeks.
Yeah, ever since we dissed him.
Yep. Yep. You know what I've noticed? And this happened last week too. We talk about a player in a certain way and then they go out and they're great. It just happens.
Hey,
that's baseball.
That's media.
That's media.
That's media.
All right. So you've got two out of the top five in O'Neill Cruz and Nick Kurtz. Three remaining. One, three, and four.
Okay. I don't think I've said him yet, but I think he's got a chance to be on here. We'll go Jordan Walker.
Jordan Walker is 13th at 52.2%.
Close. Oh, man. All right. So we got to think who crunches it. Don't know if he'll be here, but I know he's going to be kind of close. Munetaka Murakami.
Murakami is third on the list. It's your third in the top five. Murakami, 58.7% hard hit percentage.
Yeah, the rate bit is huge. It's like when he makes contact, okay.
Yeah, when he makes contact.
So with that line of thinking, I'll go with East Coast Murakami, Kyle Schwarber.
Kyle Schwarber, not even in the top 10. Kyle Schwarber is 24th.
Really?
Yeah, 50.3%, tied with Ben Rice and my favorite, Pete Crow Armstrong.
All right, okay, so... Now it's tricky. I've rattled off like a dozen names by now. So now I'm trying to think of who else. You got any hits for me, Eric?
I do. They're both left-handed.
That actually, I'm notoriously terrible at remembering who's left-handed, but I'll give that a shot.
One of them never hits the ball to the pull side.
Okay. So James Wood.
Yep. James Wood.
I was like, oh, yep.
James Wood is fourth at 58.3%. You know his average exit velocity this year is 96 miles per hour.
James Wood homered today as we're recording this. And
he is having,
I'm going to make a quick side tangent to talk about James Wood real quick.
Yeah, why not? Let's celebrate the good.
God. Yeah. Not only has James Wood, like on a rate basis, been insane, he is head and shoulders the leader in plate appearances in the year. And he's getting stolen bases to boot. I would not be that surprised if James Wood is the most valuable player in fantasy this year.
He is working himself into first round consideration next year, without a doubt. But
he's been out of his mind.
Yes, he absolutely has been. 25% barrel percentage. Wild.
That's judging.
The one thing is, let's see him do it for the full season, because he had a really great first half last year and a really terrible second half. Something tells me he wasn't fully healthy in the second half last year. Kind of Ellie De La Cruz-ish. All right, Carson, you've got one more guess to guess the number one player this year so far in hard hit percentage.
In hard hit percentage. This is always
so interesting. He hit two home runs yesterday.
Oh no. It's not going to help me that much. And hard hit percentage. Now, someone, someone in the comments is going to rail on me for not getting this as I'm back in the league.
No, I wouldn't. Honestly, this one is the most curious name, in my opinion, because of his actual results so far. But I'm actually not surprised this name is on this list based on how I felt about him in the preseason. While you're thinking about that, I just want to say, because this guy kind of is viewed in the same way as the guy I'm about to mention, but Bryce Eldridge has just been fantastic. He homered again today. He's just been incredible.
He has been hot. I might have been, I think I was kind of wrong on him. I was doubting him because it was a couple of years where he just like, he was looking like he'd get there. And it's some of those things where it's like, I feel like sometimes there's a disconnect between the confidence an organization has in a player and the actual like fantasy community, baseball community has. I felt like that was with Eldridge. He's been great.
He's been great. Cut that strikeout rate. I was really concerned about his K rate coming up through the minor leagues.
Yeah.
It's at like 22% right now, which is fantastic. And he's finally playing every day. Like, pick up Bryce Eldridge if you can. Fantastic. Plays the same position as the guy I'm talking about. Well, actually, the guy I'm talking about doesn't always play first base. He is first base eligible, though.
It's not going to be the right guess, but it'll be close. It's the only name I can think of. I'm going to guess Matt Olson.
No, that is a fantastic guess, though. Matt Olson is 11th at 53.5%. Hit two home runs yesterday. But the answer to this, the number one player in hard hit percentage so far this season at a whopping 59.7% is none other than Jackie Cags. Jack Caglione.
Is it seriously?
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah, his production does not match up with how he's hit the ball so far this year. And he may just be coming out of that ready to produce. Jack Caglione, number one in hard hit percentage so far this season, 59.7%, Carson. Can you believe that with the other names that you threw out there? It's Jackie Cags.
Tell you what, I'm looking at the list now, and you know what? I wouldn't have gotten it. You could have given me 40 more guesses. I wouldn't have gotten it. So I'll give myself some credit. I think I was peppering the top 15 there.
You were.
Jake Bowers.
Nice. Yeah, shocker, right?
Wow.
Rounding out the top 10 here for you listeners, because Carson, I know you're looking at the list. You got Cags at number one, O'Neill Cruz at two, Munetaka Murakami at three, James Wood four, Nick Kurtz five. They're your top five. And then you've got Aaron Judge, Pete Alonso, Jake Bowers, like you just said, Jordan Alvarez, and Drake Baldwin.
God.
Yeah.
Like, called John.
Drake Baldwin, I believe, is coming back very soon. My guess is 2 weeks. Pretty cool top 10 there. One of those names is not like the other, but he's having a fantastic season and playing every day now for the Brewers. Also playing in that minor league video game ballpark today. Jake Bowers, top 10. Me. That was fun.
Sure.
Yeah,
You
did really good because these are random stats. I'm not throwing out a ton of stats like we did when we were trying to blind guess players based on a number of stats. It's one and it's a leaderboard, so it's really hard. But you did great. You did absolutely fantastic. And with that, we're gonna wrap it up right there. We'll be back next Friday with a brand new episode. To make sure you never miss an episode, please subscribe. We're available wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a question for us to answer right here on the pod, reach out to us on social media, leave a comment on YouTube, hit us up on the PL Discord, or email us at theshallowspod@gmail.com. Oh, and don't forget, give us a like, a thumbs up, 5 stars. You know, it goes a long way in helping us out. Yeah, the whole nine yards. He's Carson Picard. At Carson Picard on Blue Sky. I'm Eric Hinrichsen at Eric Hin on Blue Sky and Twitter. That's Eric with a K, reminding you that murky waters are fine if you know how to swim. See you next time in the shallows.
Take care, y'all.